Hi folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here. Teresa, in our last episode, you left us all hanging, cliffhanger style, good old cliffhanger style, with announcing that you thought a lot about how to use AI at home and AI at work, basically the beginner's guide into AI for all the people that are overwhelmed and don't even know where to start. I also learned that you maybe not the most clever marketing person because you said like 15 things and 21 things. Why 21? That's an interesting question. And then share a bit more about what you did there.
What do you not like about 21?
Yeah, if we double it, it's 42. And isn't that the answer to everything?
So anyways, really the 15 should have been 41. I mean, 21. They both, whatever. Well, let's not get distracted by this.
Anyways, I thought 99 is a thing, but...
You know what? I just was on an airplane to San Diego a few weeks ago, and I just started writing. I was inspired by Josh Seiden's beginner series, and I was like, wow, it's really easy to forget how much we can help other people. Even if we don't feel like experts, there's always somebody who can still learn from our experience. And I was like, I'm going to just write down all the ways I've used AI in the last year plus. And I went through like my chat history, and I started writing this blog post, and it was intended to be one blog post. And then suddenly I was like 8,000 words in, and I was only in through the at home part. And I was like, okay, well, at a minimum, it's two blog posts. And so I split it into at home and at work. And here's my goal. I am really trying to write more personal stories to show how to do this stuff, rather than putting out like, here's 100 ways to use AI and be an expert. Like, let's just bring some humanity back into this.
Yeah, and this is that's the blog post that AI would actually write itself.
Yeah.
So nobody wants to read those ones anymore.
I'm trying to write things that only I can write. That's sort of my guiding writing light right now. Okay, so the one at home, I started with at home because if you're a true beginner, like if you're just dipping your toe in the water with AI, you've tried ChatGPT a little bit, maybe you haven't even done that, maybe you just see AI overviews on Google. Starting at work is kind of high stakes, right? So we literally can just start at home. And so in that blog post, 15 ways to use AI at home. And by the way, by using AI at home and work, this is what inspired this series. We start to build the skills we're going to need to build AI
to
products.
To build in work, yeah.
And so what I did in the blog post is I share personal stories of how I'm using this stuff. And at the end of each story, I highlight, these are the skills I learned from using it this way. And they're the same skills that I used when I built my interview coach.
And is it the obvious stuff like, I don't know, nutrition plans, exercising plans?
Yeah, okay.
What did you do?
I started dead simple. What was the very first thing I ever did on ChatGPT? I started to use it the same way I use Google, just search queries. And okay, I realized like it's faster. There's no ads. I don't have to click on five wrong links before I get to a good link. But then as I did that more, I started to get into more complex queries. Like I was having a conversation with someone and we started to wonder like, why are our elected leaders so old? And we had this question of like, how many US senators are over 75 years old? And I could Google that, but like Google doesn't know the answer, right? So I asked ChatGPT, and ChatGPT actually gave me a list of every US senator that's over 75. Amazing. Okay, and then that led to more complexity. Like I was like, oh, this thing can really do stuff.
This still sounds like a barbecue trick, by the way.
I know. So then sadly, on October 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel, I was reading the news and I had a lot of questions and I was a little embarrassed by some of my questions because I'm not an expert on the Middle East. I feel like there's things I should have known about the history of the Middle East that I did not know. And I didn't want to ask another human my questions because one, I was embarrassed by them. And two, I know this is a very politically charged topic and I don't know what I don't know and I didn't want to offend anybody with my questions. And so I actually sat down with ChatGPT and I started asking about all my questions that I was embarrassed to ask a human. And I spent like 3 hours chatting with ChatGPT about everything and anything from like, why is Israel so different from Jordan? Like, Jordan doesn't seem to be this political hotbed. Like, why is that? We even got into like, wait, what is the origin of the term anti-Semitism? And then when I learned like what Semitism meant, I was like, wait, hold on. That's not like, we talk about anti-Semitism as like against Jews, but Semitism isn't just Jews, right? And so like, it's this kind of stuff. Like, I would not feel comfortable having this conversation with a human. Like, it's so politically charged. But I learned a lot. And then, of course, I started to worry, like, ChatGPT.
Wait. Yeah. Yeah, exactly, because it's an echo chamber. It has its biases.
Yeah, okay, that's where I'm going.
So then I started
to worry about, like, OpenAI is an American-owned company. America has very extreme point of view on Israel. Am I getting a biased point of view? And so I asked ChatGPT, like, is this an American point of view? And what are the other points of view? And give me this perspective from somebody in the, like a Palestinian in the Gaza Strip. And give me this perspective from someone in a neighboring country like Jordan. And give me this perspective from somebody in Saudi Arabia. And then I asked for citations. And I started to look at other sources. So, okay, let's just talk about these three stories briefly. I went from like a simple search query, like, can I feed my dog grapes? I already know the answer. I cannot. They are poisonous for dogs. Don't give your dogs grapes. Then I moved to more complex queries like...
Service announcement.
Yeah, PSA. So then I moved to a more complex query like, how old are senators? And then suddenly I'm having a really complex conversation about a really messy, tangled topic, like geopolitical topic, where now hallucinations and bias and citations really matter. And just in that little three use case sequence, my AI skills are growing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just like section one. By the end of this, at the at home article, like I go through so many use cases, and yes, we get into things like meal planning and improving my diet. We get into movie recommendations. So my husband and I hate deciding what to watch. We are very particular about the movies that we like. We do not like the most popular movies. And so we started asking ChatGPT. We started with like, here's the types of movies we like. Give us a recommendation. And then over time, we just keep going back to the same chat window over and over again. We didn't like that. Here's why. Give us something else. Okay, we did like that. Here's why. Give us something else. Eventually, that chat conversation got so long that ChatGPT started losing details. It would recommend movies we already watched and told it we didn't like.
Yeah, I know.
This was my first introduction.
Memory isn't the best.
Context windows. I'm hitting the context window limit. I'm like, oh, interesting. Okay. So then I had ChatGPT summarize across the conversation. What do we like? What do we dislike? What have you learned about us? And I dumped it into a project. And now we have a list of all the movies we like, all the movies we don't like. We have ChatGPT's summary. And now we're able better to like compact the context and get better recommendations. So now I'm learning a new skill, like how to manage memory and how to manage memory in a way that like has persistent context. By the end of my at home, I'm getting into discussions like a year ago when I had to vote on a school bond, our school district here in Bend requested a 30% increase in their budget. And this was after COVID, after they'd have already gotten all these special COVID funds. And I support schools and I will fund schools for everything they could possibly need. But I got curious about like, where is this money going and what is it being used for? It turns out our school budget is publicly available online, both the old one and the proposed one. But like, I don't want to go through school budget spreadsheets. So I had ChatGPT model it out for me. We modeled, first of all, I was curious about, is the budget going up because of growth in our area? Is enrollment going up? So I first had it model out headcount, per headcount budget. What do we spend per student? Enrollment went up a little bit, but not 30%. So then I'm like, okay, well, let's break down the budget by category. And we started to look at, and I go, one of my concerns is that we have all these programs that were put in place for COVID. Are we still funding those programs?
Yeah.
Sure enough, we were. And they were asking for increased budget, right? So now I'm like, for whatever your politics, however you would have voted on this initiative, I'm able to ask questions of the data and ChatGPT is doing the data analysis for me. Now I had to check some numbers. I had to ask for citations. I had to validate it was using the right school budgets, right? But there is no way I would have put that level of analysis into a single bond measure on the ballot. But I'm glad I did because guess what? I didn't vote for it. And here's the thing. It's not, I didn't vote for it, not because I don't support my schools. I do. This was a May ballot. They had time on the November ballot to ask for a different budget and still get funded. So there was no risk in voting against it. It turns out most people that live in Bend agreed with me, and that ballot did not pass. The following election, they asked for a better budget. It passed. Our schools are fine.
A revised version of it.
Yeah. The other example that's towards the end of that article at home is we have an empty lot next door. And we started a debate about, should we buy the empty lot next door? But it's not for sale. So I was like, huh, how do I value a lot next door?
Ah.
Okay, well, my mom is a real estate appraiser. I have some knowledge about how property is appraised. So I just said, ChatGPT, help me evaluate how to appraise an empty lot next door to my house. Here's my address. Here's the county I live in. What data can you find? ChatGPT went out and found every sold empty lot in my neighborhood over the last 10 years and provided a summary of like the per square footage. We had a conversation about like, how as someone who's buying it as a neighbor who wants to expand their yard, the value is different than if a developer was buying it and was going to put a house on it.
Yeah.
It gave me a range, a low end and a high end. And it basically was like, as the neighbor, I would offer the low end, but no, you might be competing against a developer who might offer the high end. 2 weeks ago, the empty lot went for sale and it's listed at the high end. ChatGPT nailed it.
Oh, nailed my it. God. That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. So that's the at-home one. And it really progresses from like dead simple, here's my Google query, to very complex.
And have you found things, because just two stories from my end. So what I have been using it for a lot at home, basically, yeah, is writing children's books with my little one.
Love
so
it.
She comes to me and says, like, Mom, I have an idea for a story. The story is already in her head. She just needs to get it out. And because she's seven, her writing skills are not yet there.
Yeah.
So she has some basic ones, but her stories are usually really whimsical and really long and whatever, and so many characters and yada, yada, yada. So she basically narrates it to ChatGPT. ChatGPT creates the copy out of it. And then we started to illustrate some of these stories with either Midjourney or Sora or any of these other tools available.
Amazing.
And we've run into so many limitations and boundaries. Dinosaurs have five legs all the time. And if it's not the case, it still is. And we tried for the last two books, I think we started to have so stable characters, right? That they always look the same. So the
nice
actor, the hero of the story always looks the same. Still so hard to achieve. We found ways that we're getting better at that, but we're playing with it a lot and we're running in so many limitations. And we can see a ton of biases in the AI in illustrating a children's book.
Yeah.
So it's actually a recommendation to do so and then just like reflect on what it does. And the other one that I wanted to bring, for Product at Heart, a conference that I run once a year here in Hamburg, Germany, we wanted to have one slide in June where we have all the flags of all the country of origin from all the attendees that were attending. Impossible. Yeah. AI couldn't. It dug out the wrong flags or it created really fantasy ones for whatever reason. And it was not, it's so the simplest question of, okay, this is like 20 flags. Can you put it in three rows or something like that?
Yeah.
Did not work. So I've run in a lot of limitations. I found workarounds. But what is your experience here?
Yeah, you know what? Okay, so I love that you're bringing this up because this is why usage at home helps us build our toolbox. The more we use it, the more we learn what it's good at, what it's not good at, where context becomes a limitation. We hit context windows. We have to get good about providing the right context and no more, right? Mm-hmm. So like I do, one of my stories is about using it for meal planning. It turns out if I don't give it my meal preferences, I'm not going to like its meal plan, right? Like it's just, that's a great use case to learn how to give it the right context.
Yeah.
That's same with our movie recommendations. We started to hit context window limits. We had to change the way we gave it context. So I started to learn about memory and mechanisms for persistent memory through things like projects or custom GPTs. So I think like it's actually really important to uncover things like bias and hallucinations and context window limits, because that's what, like, you're motivated. You're creating a story with your daughter and you want to get to a good story. And so you're pushing to think about like, well, I don't like this image. How do I prompt it differently? How do I tell it to overcome this bias? And these are the skills we're going to need when we go to make real AI products to make sure they're not full of bias and hallucinations and hit context window limits.
And sometimes it's so important to see how the machine is bouncing into the same limitations and walls all the time. And even if the most clever prompt, it cannot recover.
Yeah.
So then I have to start, as you were saying, either a project or a new chat or whatever. It actually has changed the model even. Yeah. And all of that is really helpful to figure out, okay, what is it that helps AI recover from, for example, being in a dead end?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this at home article was meant for like, let's just start really basic. You can do a Google search query in ChatGPT. And then see how it very rapidly evolves. Like your queries get a little more complex and then a little more interesting. And then suddenly you're problem solving. And so there are 15 stories. I think we mentioned 5 or 6 of them. And it is a progression. And it shares at the end of each story, here's the skill you're learning. Here's the tool you're putting in your AI toolbox. So then the next one in the series is AI at home. I mean, at work. And AI at work is obviously a little higher stakes. And it builds on those same skills. We need to know context. That was our last episode. Context is king. We have to know what context to give it. We have to understand context window limits. We have to be aware of bias and hallucinations. So all those skills we learned at home, we're going to bring to work. But at work, we also have other skills we need to learn. So things like when to keep a human in the loop, what we can automate, when orchestration becomes a factor. And so
what data is safe to feed the model that you're currently using?
When is it okay to use AI at work and when
how to anonymize certain things?
Yeah. So the we're at work article follows a really similar structure. We start really simple. My simplest use cases are like, I get asked to put an address on an invoice and my accounting software needs me to parse it by address line and city and state and country. And it's an international address, and I don't know what the city and the state or region is. I don't know how to put it into zeros fields, but ChatGPT can help me, right? Or I get emails in Portuguese because my last name is Torres, but I don't speak Portuguese, so I can put it in ChatGPT. Now, I could put it in Google Translate, but I actually like ChatGPT better because ChatGPT understands context and nuance a little bit better, and I get better translations. Yeah. So those are like the simplest use cases. But then we can get into doing the work. And there's 8 use cases around where ChatGPT or Claude does work for me. And this is things like article summaries, generating article summaries for me, generating podcast descriptions and show notes. One of them is my contract bot. So I built a custom GPT to review legal contracts for me. And I trained it on my preferences in a contract. So I have some red flags, like I need to make sure I maintain the IP rights to my curriculum.
Yeah, companies I have can't one make like a derivative. That as well.
Yeah. And so
Speaker contracts in particular.
Yeah. And so I built a contract bot that I just upload the contract and it gives me a table of all the things that needs to change. And then we walk through each one and it helps me generate red lines. I do like an SEO keyword analyzer. I have a landing page analyzer. So there's this big segment on do the work. And here's the thing. I didn't start there. I started by parsing addresses, right? And then the more I used it and the more I got comfortable with it, I was like, oh, maybe you can do some work for me.
And out of curiosity, what are you using? So is it still Claude Code, or are you kind of using a different system to build kind of little agents? Because is there an agent sitting in your inbox already listening to people sending you requests for changing emails, or is it not that advanced yet?
I don't want an agent in my email. I'm still very protective about data. So I'm a big fan of a human in the loop. I don't want to fully automate most things. And this is something that comes out in the stories that I share in the at work.
Okay. Like, yeah.
You don't have to give up all your data privacy to get benefit from AI. I am very guarded on a lot of my data, and I still use AI a lot at work. And so that comes out in the stories. I mostly use ChatGPT in the browser. I use custom GPTs and projects. I use projects for where I have context that I want to be stable over a lot of conversations. And I have custom GPTs for repetitive tasks.
Yes. Okay.
Then I use Claude Code. And Claude Code is primarily my tool for AI as a thought partner. And this is the later section in the article. But the article walks through like some really simple use cases that literally anybody can do tomorrow. Parse an address, translate this for me. Then it moves into do the work. Like, what are the types of things that AI is actually good at doing for you? Yeah. Then it gets into AI as an expert researcher. And we all know that AI can provide research, but there's some nuance here. So like, I now get a quarterly report in Readwise, which is my feed reader, every quarter that summarizes the latest academic research on learning and teaching methods, on another one on decision-making, another one on critical thinking, and another one on problem-solving. And it's fully all automated. It shows up in my reader inbox. I read it every quarter. So I now have this mechanism for staying up to date on current academic research effortlessly, right? So things like that. There's a story about how I chose, I recently moved from WordPress to Ghost, and I used ChatGPT to help me with that transition. I used Claude Code to help me learn how to customize my theme. So that's one of those stories. And then I think the most valuable part of the article is the section on using Claude Code as your thought partner.
And we already recorded an episode on that, right?
We did. And I dig into using Claude to write. So I wrote, I wrote actually both these articles with Claude Code every step of the way. And then I have a big section on how I use Claude Code to code. So both writing and coding.
Yeah. Amazing. So people need to read both of these blog posts. And you, so the entry barrier is really low because you start with easy examples, stuff that everybody could do, stuff that puts everybody in this position of having the barbecue conversations with friends and relatives and coworkers.
Yeah.
I really like that. Yeah. Sounds good.
And I will share, because every story is highlighting what skills you're going to learn from trying out that use case. You'll see next I'm going to write, okay, now it's time to start building your first AI products. Here's all the tools in your toolbox, and here's how they're going to get applied as you build your first AI products.
Yeah.
So it's fun because we get help at home and at work immediately, right? We get help immediately, but we don't realize that while getting that help, we're also filling a really valuable toolbox. And so that's,
it's a safer playground to
follow
this iterative approach.
I'm trying to make it as accessible as possible. Like, we all can do this, even if there's some very valid fears about data privacy. And I don't want to outsource my writing. I don't want AI writing for me, but I can still use AI to support my writing. And so
peer reviews. I do a lot of peer reviews with AI.
So hopefully there's a lot that people can take inspiration from. And then I would love to hear from people. How are they adapting it? What are they doing? What are their workflows? So share in the comments.
Really valuable. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Petra.